off the ball.
Rugby.
Did he need minutes? He's come back.
Played the last two games. He played a long shift from Bayern. He did not need minutes. Too. And this is not being wise after the event. I didn't want to tempt fate when the team was landed on Friday. I saw in the preview that, and then I remember looking at the first couple of, why is he at the bloody all weather pitches? Part of me hates them.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Hurling Pod
on Off the Ball
with Apple Green, making every journey better.
Still getting used to that new intro, kicked in a little bit too early last week. The Hurling Pod here on Off the Ball with thanks to Apple Green, helping you relax, recharge and enjoy the journey ahead. What a weekend it's been. The defending Division A champions Cork have now won 7 league games in a row. They had 7 points to spare against Tip in front of a record crowd of 31,000 at Porky Cueve on Saturday night. Perhaps better remembered for the Malie. Good news financially for both Tip and Cork, by the way. Limerick got their first competitive win since last May, seeing off Kilkenny by 7 points as well. And a Reuben Halloran inspired Waterford had 6 points to spare over Offaly as the Dacia moved on to 4 points after 3 games. Plenty of drama in Division 1B as well. Well, Clare and Wexford made it 3 wins from 3. But the real story here, Kildare's win against Antrim, that is a first victory for the Lily Whites in the second flight for 48 years. And it has left Antrim potentially in danger of being relegated down to the third flight for next season. James Skell, how are you?
I'm very good, lads. How are things?
Good, good. Paul Murphy, how are you?
Great, lads. Brilliant. Yep.
Let's not bury the lead for the viewers as opposed to the listeners here. James Cahill is kitted and ready to go for the Patriots tonight. How difficult has it been to leave a Super Bowl ticket just kind of sitting there across the bar? This feels a bit like, I presume you've seen the movie Good Will Hunting.
Yes.
Basically it's like, I just slide my ticket across the bar and just accept. And they knew, my friends knew that I had to go see about a girl.
Yeah.
You had to go see about a boy.
I did have to go see about a boy. And look, the first time was very hard, 7 years ago. When my first girl was born, she was born on the 26th of January. Uncle had a ticket for ready to go. Then he sends me a picture the night before the Super Bowl. He's having dinner with Tony Romo and Jerry Jones, right? Then today, I was just feeling okay about myself today. The young lad was kind of going a bit hairy. The house is a bit frantic today. I get a picture then today, and the picture is of the Super Bowl pre-party tickets, pre-game parties with the Patriots, and he's got 6 of them, and he goes, one of these is yours. And I was like, oh my God.
No.
But why would you do it to me? And he does it, like, the man is in his 70s, right? He's my uncle. He's a great dude. He does it thinking, this is what I did for you. But he's actually, he's just killing me. Yeah. That's what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, oh, Jesus.
Is he insanely connected if he can get a table with Jerry Jones and Romo?
Oh, insane. Like, my uncle then, one of my cousins, he was having dinner last night with, Adam Vinatieri. Like, do you know what I mean? Do you remember the kicker?
One of the best kickers of all time.
One of the best kickers inducted into the Hall of Fame this year, they're having dinner at Vinatieri. I mean,
no way.
Then the two cousins take a picture and they're with the cheerleaders. You know what I mean? It's like, just stop, please. Why are you doing this? Upsetting me even more. Meanwhile, my uncle flipping shits, he's nappy, and I have to go change it. It's like, jeez.
Before we go any further, don't have too much sympathy for this man and his fear of missing out. He's going to be fine. He'll get his snacks. He'll watch the Super Bowl later on. He'll hope that the Patriots overcome the Seahawks, win a 7th Lombardi Trophy, all that. But more importantly, the only reason you're not at Levi's Stadium is because you have your firstborn boy.
The first Cahill boy born in 38 years.
So like,
quite a lot. And just quite a lot on these shores, should I say, more.
They needed to spread you out, though, to be fair. Like, you can't have too many of them bar too close together. Like,
that's a great one, actually. It's super. Look, it's been a really good week, I have to say. It's been a tiring week. It's been a week of adjustment, I will say that, because a person told me one time, I may have said it on the podcast before, one child is like one, two is like 1,000, okay? 3 and 4 is like, whoa, it's just different levels. They're gone different directions. You haven't got enough arms and legs. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just they've you heavily outnumbered. The decibel level increases to a level that sounds like a fucking Concorde inside the house every day. You know what I mean? You can't hear nothing for all the crying and screaming. Oh yeah. So look, but anyways, hey, life is rosy. Will, life is rosy. Pats from the Super Bowl. We're going to do it tomorrow morning. Won't be bet. Don't get me wrong. 4 kids on top of me. But when we win the 7th Lombardi, I'd be Gucci. I'd be all good. Don't you worry.
Why have you called him Joey?
Again, family connections. my father and my uncle's second name was Joseph. My cousin, he passed away in America, was Joseph. So we said, you know what, we'll go with the Joey. And I liked the name of it, and I wanted to keep the initials JS as well. I didn't want to name him James. Grace mentioned James. I said, no, not doing that to him. I'm not setting up straight away, like, you know. So we went to Joey. I like the ring to it.
Sorry, Murphy, you were about to kick in there.
I wasn't at all. Well, actually, all I was going to say was that they'll make the connection through Skehill alone anyway. It's not a case that he's like Joey Murphy, where it's like, ah, he could be, once they hear Skehill, they know.
Surely
related.
Yeah. Absolutely.
One of our good friends of the pod, the man I call the OG, Tiago Silva, was in contact, our Brazilian in Limerick. He was really worried that we weren't going to come back, first of all. So he said he was checking the date from last season just to make 100% sure that we didn't start maybe a little bit earlier, a little bit later. Yeah. Then he saw it popped up in his podcast feed. He had a listen. He went along in the YouTube and threw a few comments on there as well. He saw that little baby Joey Scale had arrived, and he said the inspiration, Scale, is that he's going to plough on and try and have a boy now. He's got three girls as well.
Jeez. Yeah, now if
you advised him directly, I went into the WhatsApp and I said, the OG has said this, what's your advice to him?
Yeah, and I did use the words, keep plowing, I think it was the words I probably used, probably in that kind of tone as well. that's a dangerous character to play now. Yeah, he just needs to think about it, really think about it. I can't tell you the amount of shit I Googled, like what foods I should be eating, you know, if I should be exercising much, should I be wearing tight jeans, you know. What positions to do. I was doing all this. What temperature should be in the room? You know, I was doing all this Googling, right? And I forgot it all. I don't know how we got it right. Simple as that.
What positions to enhance conception is a whole different podcast. That might be one for the members.
My Google search now, that would actually open your eyes. Nothing bad, but just the how...
What creates the conditions for a boy?
How broad it is, like. You know what I mean? I could go from, like... Do I have to pay preliminary tax in Ireland? Yes. Munster bovine. You know, movable GA goalposts. You know, sheer fitness band and slow. I had so many. Stephen Cluxton, time taken freeze. That was one I had too. Because Jared McCarthy. You know, that's where it came from, Stephen Cluxton. He was a minute. So let's put that out there. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
I got a feeling we'll get to that. The other thing I wanted to confirm from the comments last week, straight to the Spotify, Kira Herity. I'm presuming wife of David Herity, Murph.
Correct, yeah.
A long-time listener and a mother, I really enjoyed this one. And also another female listener called MCC said, you've got lots of women listening to this pod.
Brilliant.
So we weren't talking shite at the end of it, saying there's actually a nice gender mix. I've checked the back end of the podcast as well. It is it's closer to 50-50 than I thought it was.
Really?
Not what I expected.
I would have said a strong 80-20 in favour of males. I wouldn't think it was actually females at all. That's
100% what I expected.
Okay.
Experience in person as well. Just bumping into people who hear us.
Yeah.
Far more than I would have expected.
Yeah, yeah. I actually find it interesting when people say to you that, like, you be in random places and people say it. I just find that because, you know, the way we record it here and it's just the three of us and you're sitting at your kitchen table or scale, you're upstairs, wherever, will you have your whole... perfect recording studio there, yeah. But in your room in Tullamore or home in Tullamore, but you forget then, it just gets put out and you forget about it then. But like you meet people then who will say to you, getting on a train or going into a pub or something, I find that funny. I find that very peculiar. Like, but and it also shows how far reaching it is. But yeah, it's great.
Do you forget sometimes what you say to us?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Completely. Yeah, so if the public catch me about something I say, I'm like, did I actually say that? I don't know if I say it. I have a clue.
What's funny is like somebody might take exception to something you said, you know, 10 podcasts ago, and they remember it, but you don't remember it. And it could be a very throwaway comment, but then they'll bring it up to you, and you're standing there going, gee, I don't remember that at all, yeah. Because it wasn't meant with any malice, but the listener might take it as malice. So, yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
A lot of us people just come up having conversations around the pod. So one of the train conductors in Tullamore is a Tipperary fan who now lives in Westmeath but works in Tullamore train station. Talks to me all the time about Tip. Last year when Tip went flying, he was mad keen to talk about the pod every time I walked by him or walked past him if I was coming home in the evening. I bumped into someone. I was getting coffee on Friday on the way home from work and someone just walked over and went, oh yeah, I love the hurling pod. What scale are you like?
I was donating blood last year and the lad who was taking my blood was a Carlow man. And he was like, yeah, sit down there, blah, blah, taking blood and all this stuff. And he had his head down and like the blood was coming out into the oak and he was going, You didn't mention Carlo on the pod there the other night. They actually had a I was like, Jesus Christ, I wasn't expecting that. And he wasn't even looking at me when he said it. And I was like, geez, this is the, I don't know, the last place. I suppose doctors who take blood also listen to it. But yeah.
Oh, days. And what a time when a tube is in your arm to see the pressure of somebody wondering why you haven't
talked to him. Your man's extracting blood from me. And then he's also telling me that he took exception to not mentioning Carlo. It's like, this is a dangerous position to be in.
You thought, Skell, we were going to get about 25,000 into Páirc Uí Chaoimh on Saturday night. It surpassed that. 25,000, I think, were sold by Wednesday or Thursday, so we knew it was going to be north of that. 31,000 is a new record, so it's for a standalone hurling fixture in the league at this point, where we're not talking about multiple league finals and so on at the one time. 31,000 is a new record crowd, which is quite remarkable. It gave the whole night a kind of a championship feel. I did like that the stadium announcer also announced Tipperary on as the All-Ireland champions. There was a lot of pomp and ceremony before the game started. But what did you make of Cork 29, Tipperary 22? Is it too simplistic to say, first half was interesting, two red cards seemed to redirect the game?
So first of all, it was definitely a league game. You know what I mean? If you took this game now, I know there was night time. If you put it on any time of the year, years to pass, I would say that was definitely a league game. I just had that feel about it. Both teams went out and they went out intense, I would say. But you have to understand, I'd say, what level of work have both teams done in the last 5-6 weeks? You know, in terms of getting sharpness up, in terms of it's obviously very fitness orientated, S&C orientated, new players, etc. So for the time of year we're at, like in the second week in February, whatever it is, you know, we got what we expected, to be fair. And I think it was a good enough game. It's just that I thought it was awful, like, loose. You know, one thing that stood out for me was, you know, there was 25 out of the 28 points from play, do you know what I mean, in the first half. That's a crazy statistic, Les. It was 16-12 at halftime, wasn't it? 25 of those points were from play. That's mad. Like, you would never see that in a championship game. Never. You just wouldn't, because it wouldn't be allowed to happen. Do you know what I mean? It just wouldn't happen, whereby you get so many opportunities to play. And it's kind of where the way, and probably it's a grander thing I want to talk about in terms of hurling in general. Every team seems to be playing the same way, whereby their half back line to half forward, and that then those eight boys, it's a free for all if whoever wants to attack and shoot. You know what I mean? It's a question of possession in that space versus, you know, the 50-50 demand battle like we had in years previous in games. Like, that day seems to be gone. The only 50-50 battle you see nowadays is a cornerback and corner forward. That's it. You know, maybe a fullback and full forward. You don't see any more 50-50 battle with the ball rained down top of them. So it's very kind of congested in the middle. It's a pure space game. Space games in the likes of February, March can warrant a game like this, where there's just so many shots, so many opportunities, you know, very open, not exactly intense, etc. So, because teams don't have the sharpness as of yet. Like, you yourself, you need 10, 12, 14 weeks to get that sharpness into your game. That doesn't come 6 weeks back on the pitch. That comes 5 months where you get off the championship race. And the game was, I enjoyed the game. I thought it had a few good moments per se. I was intrigued to watch certain players in certain positions. Like I said, O'Leary, Dara O'Leary and William Buckley, want to see how they go on. You know, Johnny Ryan, Oisín Donoghue, watching those guys. And, you know, they gave you something to think about, something to talk about in terms of, are they going to replace some players on the teams at the moment? You know, are they going to replace them? You know, I'm saying Robert Doyle, for example, I'm saying, I know Patrick Horgan's gone, but we spoke about Declan Dalton last week. So there was a lot of questions raised, a few answers. But again, I think we got what we expected, to be honest. I think it's fair to say.
I think so. It was loose, Murph. There was a lot of loose shooting in the first half as well. I know at one point Darren Maloney was praising it. He was saying, oh, they've gone 15 and 15 and whatever. I don't know if that was exactly true, though, because, like, Willie Connors was still playing as a screener. No. It was like it wasn't a 15 on 15 battle, which is being portrayed in the commentary sometimes.
No, it wasn't. And I think as well, see, it's hard because I've watched the last the two Cork matches, or three Cork matches, but I've watched particularly Galway and the Tipperary match. You're watching them at home, so you can't really see the formation or how they're setting up. But from what I'm hearing, Rob Downey is sitting back quite a bit from that central position. And, like, even the other night, it was obvious enough that, you know, he was letting whoever was rotating through the centre forward position, be it Armand or whoever, or Jake Morris, whoever was out there, he was letting them drift out the field, because the way they were kind of, this is what I'm taking from it, the way they were looking at it was that they were kind of leaning more towards protecting the goal and congesting that area, and then, you know, trying to create the space down the far end of the field. And this is something that Cork seemed to be wanting to do at the moment. The only thing, and I didn't actually mention it last week, particularly from the Galway match, the only thing that, like, I'd be wondering about is that Galway managed to get 7 points ahead of them at one stage, and we're still hitting wides. You know, potentially could have pushed that out to 8 or 9. 7 points is achievable, but when we start to go to 8 or 9, when we start to get drift into the area of where, okay, are you going to do a tactical overhaul here now? Are you going to change how you actually set up? And that's the one thing I'm looking at with Cork at the moment, that
for both sides, yeah, it was loose enough on Saturday night. You know, there was a lot of open play, and those really hard questions weren't asked of either team about their setup, about different things. But I think when a team comes along and asks that about Cork, it'd be interesting to see what to do. It's just a point. It's just, you know, I just see that happening where there is a big structure thing that Cork look like they want to do, and they want Rob Downey potentially to sit there. And I'm completely open for correction on that. But because Galway were able to maybe rack up a few scores on them, and like Tipperary started really well on Saturday night as well, I actually looked at them and said, these lads look really sharp. I think they could really kick on. And then Cork grew into the game and started taking off really good scores. But it was interesting for that period that I often think when teams are really trying to go towards a structure, and this is the time to be doing it, like the league is the time to do this and trying to get it in. But there's always a question that if you're going to lean on a structure, and the structure is going to be, well, this is the way we want to hurl in every match going forward, we're not going to tailor it for another team, this is the way we want to hurl, what happens if that really gets torn apart one of the days? So that's one of the things I'd be wondering about. But yeah, look, I mean, the first 10 minutes, Tipperary were picking off scores there. They seemed to have loads of space. The hurling was really sharp. They were popping the ball around. And then Cork just got to grips with it, and then Cork started pinging off their own scores at the end. But there was a nice bit of open play about it. It was enjoyable. There was a nice bit of intensity as well. I know we'll get to the melee in a minute, but I think building up to that melee, the game didn't actually have that feel about it, that it was actually going to break out into a row. Or, you know, I didn't get that feeling where something like that was going to happen. So I thought it was a really good match up until that. And I thought, look, I'm happy enough with the overall standard match. I'm actually really happy with it for a league match at this stage as well, because sometimes we can build these games up and they turn into nothing. Do you know, like, as in two teams go out, they don't want to show their hand, and it kind of falls flat in its face. So it was a really good match for that. And then, of course, as well, there's the black card to talk about. Like, again, Will, you can tell us when you want us to talk about these things, but for me, it wasn't.
No, you've teed it up nicely for yourself. The black card's not a black card.
It's not. And I'm actually... This is probably hot take of the night, or thing, you know, let people argue with me. I'd be more upset about the black card than I would about the two red cards, because for me, Johnny Ryan, he should be allowed to go and tackle a player. Like, the black card shouldn't take away from an honest tackle being put in on a player. Mm-hmm. And I maybe just thought there's two things happen. Maybe Liam Gordon misinterpreted, and I'm not going to talk and not be patronizing to Liam Gordon there. Maybe he misinterpreted, but he didn't pull him down. And my understanding is that's why it was there, that he pulled him down. Johnny Ryan went to make a tackle on him, and a defender should always be able to make a tackle if it's an honest tackle, you know, free of fear that you're going to get a black book in case your man falls over. You know, like Mikey Carey got a black book, and what he pulled at, was it Garrod Hegarty? No, it wasn't Garrod Hegarty. Whoever it was going in anyway, he did pull at their arm, and, you know, it was a pull down. Black book, no problem. But I feel bad for Johnny Ryan there, that, you know, but justice was done at the same time. It was saved, so kind of balanced out. But I wouldn't like to see more of them being given.
I was mindful last night because I'd watched Wexford Carlow just before, and I was thinking about some of the black cards the week before, and because this is a purely hurling week and more games are on the TV, we got to see a little bit more this week, and I was wondering, was that my own confirmation bias scale about the amount of black cards that would be given out? But realistically, they were all over the place this weekend, and these, again, were not being issued last season, and I think we've seen an honest mistake by Gordon when it came to that. But it's definitely not a pull down. It's definitely not a reckless use of a hurley. He is trying to hold up the attacker who is running at him, and I think Johnny Ryan was very unlucky to be put in the bin.
I agree with you. I think even in real time, okay, when I saw it in real time, it could have fooled me a little bit. When you have the ability for a replay or further discussion, you say, no, it wasn't the black card. The black card was brought in to rule out cynical fouls. Cynical fouls are fouls that are done completely on purpose to stop a goal scoring opportunity taking place. So if this was another sport like soccer, for example, if it was a one-on-one defender versus attacker, and the defender is both side, and he tackles the attacker, it's yellow card. And it goes down. Do you know what I mean? Let's say he misses the ball, it goes down. If the attacker is goal side and the defender pulls him down, red card. Do you know what I mean? So I would put that in the same classification as the black card, yellow card, and hurling. So if the defender is goal side, attacker runs at him, and he makes an attempt to tackle whatever type of tackle that is, and he goes down, yellow card. All the way around, if the attacker is goal side and the defender goes to wrap him up or rubber tackle him, pull a jersey, trip him, whatever, it's black card. I think once you can differentiate that, the public will get behind it far easier. I know we will. I know when we're looking at games now in future, and if there's a situation whereby Mossy Jones runs through a goal and Dahi Brook rubber tackles his legs, black card, no one will have a complaint. But if it's the other way around, or Mossy's running at Dahi and Dahi goes to tackle him and he falls over, you know, still a foul, yellow card, but it was given as a black, then I'd be pissed. Do you know what I mean? So I think in this situation, I just think clarity needs to be brought in, you know, around what warrants a black card. And sometimes these new rules come in, and referees are human, folks. They mightn't get the differentiation correct at times in live games. You know, angles can make a difference. Umpires might give them a different opinion. It's a tricky one, you know. And I feel like we're discussing these topics every year. This today now is the black card. Last year it could have been hand passing. Then it could be the face card. You name it, right? But the black card is the hot topic. So, but to round it off, watching the blacklist. Simple as that.
Hmm. Welcome to the National Hurling League. It's a penalty yellow card. That's what should have happened.
Correct. Yeah, penalty yellow card. I agree with you. Still a foul, but Tipton deserved to lose a man for 10 minutes. And like, did Cork rack up 5 points in the 10 minutes?
Yeah, but it also fundamentally changed Tipperary's approach. So Tip ends up pulling another attacker out deeper to try and basically flow the middle of the field. And then that left Tip very short. And that ball that Murph was talking about earlier, you know, where they were getting ball into the forwards and it was kind of sticking early on. I found after the black card that started to stop a bit, and then Cork started to turn the screw. That's not to say the Cork weren't really good. I thought they were excellent in the 10-minute spell or so after the black card, but you can't dismiss the fact that tactically Tipperary had to change as a result of the going down to 14 men side of things. The melee itself, I don't know, Murph. I don't know how anyone gets picked out here. I know Jason Ford comes in, and when you're given a bit of a shoulder when you come in as the third man, you're always leaving yourself in trouble. But I think good luck based on the footage that we saw so far this weekend. And RT showed a fair few angles of it at half time in the game to pick out Barrett and Ford as the two men who get the red cards.
Yeah, look, I definitely didn't see what Shane Barrett did. I think RT has kind of highlighted what Jason Ford did. Like, I mean, didn't hurt anyone. I don't know, was it a Donoghue he went in on? I think someone else said it was actually Kingston he hit or Coleman or whoever. But yeah, he ran from a distance. He ran from about 40 yards. And then, see, the thing is that he kind of probably pegged himself out as, if you were looking at a melee, it's very hard to see what's happening. But if there's lads coming running from distance, they're now the sacrificial lambs about to go to the slaughter. You're running to the slaughter. That's essentially what you're doing. But yeah, like there was nothing to it. And I think everybody has said that there was very little to it. But I think there's a fair bit to unpack in it as well. Like this isn't, there's a bit of a history with this in terms of, like we mentioned it there when we're recording the members pod, all this crack that I had to look into it today just to see, it's like, why? I remember this rule. I remember Brian coming in and telling us one of the days, every so often, Brian would come into the dressing room, league match, lads, the referees, they're clamping down on this, don't do it. And that was his exact words, just don't do it. And this one was around 2018. There had been one or two incidents, I think even in club matches and different things from the previous year, that this rule had been in since around 2012 or 13. And then it had been kind of sitting on the back burner there. I don't remember it being reused. I'm talking about the third man into the melee and contributing to melee or whatever you want to call it. But around 2018, it started being locked down. And Brian just said, listen, lads, if two lads are fighting, let them off. Don't go running in because the two boys will get two yellows and you'll get the red card. And around that time, everybody was kind of walking on ice or on thin ice. They were like, listen, not going to go running in. And it had the desired effect. Since then, we haven't really seen it being used, or maybe we just haven't seen that many melees whereby there's just handbags, nobody throws a slap. And they're looking, that was the point of it, to look to discourage this thing of players coming running in where nobody does an obvious strike. What rule can they actually put in where a lad, now it's still probably harsh enough to give a lad a straight red card over it because the two boys really did nothing, but they were the sacrificial lambs. And the other argument that people could say is that, well, what about the other 26 players? Like, you know, at the end of the day, Alan Connolly and Willie Connors were full of you can't send off all the other lads as well. So probably what happened was just that, look, they were trying to lay down a marker for the players. They had to act and they had to do something, but there was no obvious, you know, striking or anything going on. I saw Ben O'Connor was upset about it as well. To be honest, I saw Liam Cahill going over and asking Liam Gordon at halftime, and he just seemed to be asking, what was it that happened there? Grand, okay, we'll get on with it. And then didn't seem too fussed about it. I don't see the cards being rescinded. I know Liam Sheedy said it, but I don't see it. I don't see it. Like, I mean, we've seen red cards there. Was it last year, Offaly and Waterford? Was that last year? Was the year before? The shoulder to the head that wasn't a shoulder to the head, didn't get contact. I think Alan Tynan. Yeah. Alan Tynan's one on Keane Kenny that didn't make contact, that wasn't rescinded. So I don't think these will be rescinded. But the bottom line is, I just think the two boys were sacrificial lambs. They had to pick someone. And the other argument is to be said, and this is a point, which is a point for conversation. This was the game spilling over. Like, this is the most physical representation of the game spilling over. 30 players inside. Granted, no slaps were thrown or no dirty digs. But you have to question what's going to happen after this. Like, if you just go, right, lads, we're going to get on with it and throw in the ball. Let's say, hypothetically, there's a dirty stroke. And let's say we're sitting here this morning talking about Willie Connors has a broken leg, touch wood and all this stuff, Willie Connors, or we're talking, you know, Rob Downey or whatever. The conversation we're having then is that the referee and the officials lost control of the game. And they'll point back towards the melee and say, why didn't you do something there? So I think Liam Gordon and them took decisive action. And I wouldn't be that upset. I'm a neutral, though. So Cork and Tipperary fans might feel different, but it's the whole thing is messy. Like, players shouldn't be running like that anyway. I've been involved in it myself. Shouldn't have been doing it. I think back to ones there. We played Tipperary in the park. League final, I think it was. JJ ended up boxing Lark Corbett on the ground. Two boys got sent off. And, like, you just kind of get on with it. But you know it's the player's fault. We're all running in, hitting each other, shunts, whatever. So it is a messy one to unpack. I think the referees and the officials' biggest mistake was the 3 minutes. That nobody kind of kept an eye on the 3 minutes, that there wasn't that additional time. So, yeah.
The problem for me, right, in this is that some of these instances, I always use the phrase objective versus subjective, right?
Go on.
So objective is by letter of the law, it's factual, you know, it's in the rule book.
Yeah.
There's no misinterpretation, it's there in black and white. Subjective is all opinion-based, right?
Mm.
So it feels like to me that the red cards last night were subjective, they were opinion-based. They were like
a decision
by the referee to try and keep control. So he or she can make a decision on the pitch for the betterment of the game. But then if an incident happens, like where a lad's hurdle might hit a head or a face guard gets caught in the hand, then it becomes objective. And it's fact. It's fact in the rule book, red card.
My
issue is that, what are we? Are we objective or are we subjective? A referee, for me, has to be objective, right? 99.9% of the time. Whereas in this situation, when a row takes, and the level of, I use the word damage, was zero. It was zero, to be honest. The biggest thing that happened was the time wasted, as you said, the time lost in the game. You know, so book the two boys, move on. You know, move on. There wouldn't be a word said in the crowd. You know what I mean? And if another incident happened later on, treat that objectively. Then treat that as a red card or a yellow card, whatever you want to call it. You know, if another incident happens, treat that as an individual incident, not as a pool of incidents caused by the row earlier on. So sport is riddled with that kind of stuff, though, lads. Especially hurling, like, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, look at the Yanks. Yanks would fucking have a fight there. Have at it, lads.
They're ice hockey.
Yeah. Have at it. Until you fall on the ground, we're not going to break you up. And once you get 2 minutes in the bin, back at it.
See, the reason you're a big advocate for this is the famous American brawl that you ran 100 yards and milled a Dublin fella out of it. So
I hit the wrong Dublin fella, as I recall.
Hit the wrong Dublin fella. So I don't expect you. Yellow card. I should have got... What did you... You didn't get anything for that.
I got nothing. I got banned respectively.
What did you?
Are you banned from the next Boston Sevens? Is that what happens?
I didn't go back to the next Boston Sevens. I was banned.
So you're grand.
Yeah, finished. So my ban is served. So
you're banned from the Boston Sevens. Holy God.
Yeah. Four of us got banned. That's it. Four people got banned.
Did they carry over into hurling over here? No.
Do they carry
continent? You can't.
I'd have to check my records. I have a letter there somewhere from the GAA. I can't remember. But like it was November, December, so there was no Ireland to play.
So you're grand, yeah.
Was it even 15 aside? Probably was it?
It was the 11s, Murph.
How could you get suspended from that? Like, how could that carry into it? We were playing 11 aside hurling on a baseball field or
an exhibition match. Yeah.
Because I wasn't sent off, Murph, I remember in the letter, it was something about bringing the association into disrepute, something like that.
Mm.
You know, whatever wording they use, you know.
Yeah.
That was fucked up.
For anyone who missed it last week, maybe I should bring this to the main pod listeners because they might not be a member. If you are, you get it all. But if you're not, this may be the place to announce it. James Gale is finished with hurling, at least for now. You've retired entirely.
Yeah, good, yeah. From senior club, yeah, finished. Like, as I said before, like, you've got some guys that will play until they're in their 40s and 50s. That's just not me. I'm done. Move on, next thing. Simple as that. So I have other prizes I want to put my eyes on will... try and make a few pounds out of something as opposed to losing money on hurling and losing limbs and losing dipping energy and bones breaking. So,
I know. There's part of me that kind of thought, you know, goalkeeper, and we know many goalkeepers, particularly in club teams around the country, who play for many, many years because that position can save you a little bit.
But as I said before, we have two goalkeepers in the club who are in their very early 20s. And I just think it's wrong of me, right, to occupy a position that they're going to occupy guaranteed. So get out of the way and let them thrive, you know what I mean, when they're in their youngest years. Because a concern of mine would have been, if I stayed trudging along here, and believe me, there was a couple of years left in the body, no problem. But what happens if I lose one of the goalkeepers, he goes off abroad, you know, goes off to a different club, that would be shit, you know what I mean? So get out of the way, let them battle it out then. You know, that was one of the, another big, I suppose, part of the decision, you're going to call it that. Plus, I have any amount of, life form to keep alive around the place here in terms of children and cattle. So I said, I better spend more time at home.
Yeah, to me it sounds like a sensible decision indeed. So Alan Connolly hitting 8 of those Cork points during the game, 4 of them coming from frees. Dara Fitzgibbon was very good, 7 points, 1 free. Owen Connolly took over 4 frees after he came on for Tipperary. Dara McCarthy scored 2 from frees, and Jake Morris, their captain, scored 3 points, 2 of them from play and 1 of them from a free. Which brings us around very nicely to the time that's being taken on these frees. After the game, Liam Cowell was speaking on Off the Ball. Murphy says, I don't care how long Dara McCarthy takes to take a free. He pops it over, that's all I care about. He also made the very fair point that Tipperary were chasing the game at the time that he was taking the frees. Some of the Cork fans were booing him. I saw Ashley Maloney, the Tipperary ladies footballer, making the point that it was very, very uncouth that you've got Cork fans who are booing this young forward who's just getting down to do his free routine. Do you have a problem with how long Dara McCarthy takes to take frees?
No, not in the slightest. I think I've seen it somewhere. It's been mentioned maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago. I think they're all around the same. Like last year, Patrick Horgan, TJ himself, they're all around the same.
So to give proper credit, Paul Carroll from Tip FM went back and rewatched a few All-Ireland finals and timed some of the other, I'd say, main free takers, is how I put it. And basically, they were all coming in around the 20-second range.
But even before that, even before someone sat down and did that, I never even noticed that or Dara McCarthy might be taking too long, or that Patrick Horgan might. I have no issue with it whatsoever. I was surprised. I didn't know whether there were maybe a bit of booing because of the red card last year. Like, I actually didn't know, but I did notice the boos. But yeah, it's pointless. Like, I mean, he's actually taking them fairly quickly, all things considered. Like, he gets down to it. He has a routine. Every free taker worth their salt has a routine. His one might be a little bit more, he stands back and he quite obviously steps in over it and all this crack, but he's average in terms of length. He's not long, he's not short, he just takes them. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a null point altogether. I have no issue with it.
Yeah. What do you think, Scott?
I think we should go back further in the game. As I was saying earlier, like, look back at Stephen Cluxton. If you're allowing a goalkeeper to come out, and I'm talking football, but I'm still talking GAA, so the rules apply in similar instances here. So, like, It's a done thing now where most goalkeepers in football come out and they take the long range frees. And long range frees in football is not 100 yards, it's 50 yards. So they have to cover the 100 yards to get up the pitch. So and they're allowed to do so, right? Because it's a bit of a spectacle for the game. And you go back to Ireland final, the Cluxton played with Kerry. You'll tell me the year now against Kerry. You'll tell me the year where one chef where Dublin beat Kerry the Ireland final.
2011, the last kick of the game.
Yeah. Mark O'Shea, is it Tomás O'Shea hands in the ball?
Mm-hmm.
No, I could be correct, you know, was like a minute and 20 seconds was lost or used by Dublin, let's say, and the time wasn't added on. So, like, where Dara McCarthy takes, what, 15, 20 seconds? I have no issue with that. Again, that's just, again, go back to my situation. That's a subjective opinion. You know, like, my issue, if people want to be, you know, start barking about it, look at lads fouling the ball when they're raising it, you know?
Yeah.
Patrick Horgan always fouled the ball when he's raising it. So does Jimmy Burns. They're soloing the ball as they're raising it. So, but like, do you know what? I don't give a shit. Like, it's part of the game. I don't care. But if you want to be nitpicking on a young lad taking 21 seconds, we should be taking 17. Come on. You know, let's get a small bit real here, to be honest. Like, 21 seconds in the grand scheme of things. He might get it in 10 times during the game. He's burned 3 minutes. Ah, come on.
And realistically, sure, it could be down to referee just to add it on then. Not on your 20 seconds. They're on 25. There's no major drama with it, like.
But look at Billy Nolan comes out for Waterford. Mark Fanning comes out for Wexford.
Yeah.
Owen Murphy comes out for, he does come out to Kinney.
Yep.
He does come out. Rhys Shelley comes out for Tip. You know, Patrick Collins, they all do it, lads. You know, and the goalkeeper coming out takes way more time than Dara McCarthy would in terms of his set routine. So, like, I don't think timing is the issue at all. I just think people, you know, if I want to be honest, they're nitpicking Dara McCarthy because he won the Ireland last year. He's young and they just don't like it. That's the size of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a degree of jealousy about it, if I'm honest.
I do think as well, Murph, we've all been on this, where it's frustrating where a foul is given away and it feels like the free is taking an eternity to be hit. But the reality is that's a bit of a punishment for the person who's given away the foul as well.
Yeah. Like, and it depends. The things you have to take into context here as well is that people only really notice it when you're a trailing team and it's the opposition team who's in front who's maybe taking a little bit longer. But, like, again, I don't see this as being a point. I can't think of anyone jumping into my mind where that they're taking liberties with how long they take in terms of taking frees, et cetera, et cetera. So, I'd agree with you. It's just an additional punishment if you're after fouling somebody that they get to take time over. Like, yeah, I just think, is there even point in having a conversation about this? There's nobody abusing this rule at the moment. And I agree with Skettle there as well. Like, I think there's an element there of yeah, a bit of jealousy. Like, Darren McCarthy had a great year last year. Maybe, like, you know, a bit of the red card coming into it. That was down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. You know, fantastic All-Ireland final as well. So maybe there's a little bit of that putting them off. I think we'd see it with other players as well. Like, you know, the odd time there, Gerard Hegarty might get a bit of it for, you know, if down below in Ennis or something, if they're playing. Gerard Hegarty now is the man who gets the brunt of that then. Like, and I'm sure there's plenty of players.
Well, where's the team from Murph? It always stems from a little bit of jealousy. It goes back to the Jordan Man phrase I've used long before. You hate him, but you love to have him.
That's it. It's because they're like such that important player where it's like you'd love to see him miss a free. Like, you know, if TJ missed a free from Kenny, there's a jeer. It's not a cheer. There's a kind of a jeer about it. Like, and then there's these players. Darren McCarthy's getting into that space now where people.
He's there.
He is. Yeah, you're right.
The minute he rattled that penalty last year in the Northern final, the minute he hit that, boom! Yeah, that kid is nervous as steel. He's arrived.
Yeah.
Well, look, I'm sure it's going to be a very different game when they meet first round of the Munster Championship, but, there were certain elements from it that I think were quite interesting on Saturday night. The other thing about the looseness in all this, Gael, as well, so Cork had 18 points in play throughout the game as well. So it wasn't just Cork being a bit loose and letting Tipperary get shot. Similarly, at the other end, it felt that Cork were able to run through them a few times during the game. I'm sure that will not be allowed when April and May come round.
God, no, because I have a stat sheet here. It looks like there's no structure to whatsoever. But the forwards, that said the unit, Cork had 18 points in the forwards unit. Tip at 5. You know, from play. So that's not great, as the lads say. Think about what Owen Connolly, the influence he came on, but from play spot. So I think you look back at this game from a Tipperary perspective and you see what Cork's strengths are. And the strength that Cork showed last night is probably a lot of the strengths that we expected them to show in the Ireland final last year. That's the kind of form they're in last year. They were in their pomp, you know what I mean? Everything was going great. Public were behind them. Like, this red wave was coming. And it was unstoppable. And it was very similar to what we thought. What we thought would happen is what happened last night. Do you know what I mean? In terms of the runners are coming through. I, in my notes, I have basically that the half-back line for Cork, the half-forward line for Cork, they work together in the sense that you often see Barrett comes back very deep. Fitzgibbon will come back deep. Apparently, he's playing. It then allows the likes of Rob Downey and his brother Owen off up the pitch. Just take off and occupy somewhere. So Owen Downey, did you shoot 2 points long range? Found himself in midfield yesterday.
Yeah.
So there's a certain freedom about the way they're playing because he knows he's got protection from behind. I see that now when the championship game comes along, that's going to be bottled up. That'll be a cauldron. That middle third, as we always call it in GA, that middle third will be an absolute war zone. And those pops from long range, those lovely runners coming off with those triangular passes, that won't happen as often as it happened last night. And it's just a can't, because if it does, Tipper will bet 10 points. Simple as that. If you've got numerical parity in the pitch, that should never happen. If you're a man down, okay, I'll say it will happen. It happened last year, obviously, with McCarthy sending off. But if you're numerical parity, that can't happen. You've got to go man toe to toe, and it just didn't happen last night. And like, in fairness to him, Cahill said himself, they weren't at the level in terms of intensity. They just weren't at it, you know. And obviously, you can look at the load during training, the players, the amount of load they have to go through, which in college we already covered. But that's just, I think he's just a victim of circumstance at the time of year right now. But I'd say come May, different kettle of fish entirely, especially at home.
Murphy, you ready for some more Ben O'Connor straight shooting from last night?
Yeah, it's such early on, I wasn't expecting it. He's catching me off guard here, but really firing from the hip. And like, it's hugely refreshing in lots of ways. But at the same time, you know, I think he got annoyed, was it, because the Sunday game. I didn't watch the Sunday game last week now, but he was saying that his words were misconstrued. I don't know if they were or they weren't.
I got his quotes here. He said, last week, this was in the press conference. So he did 4 or 5 interviews. He spoke to Woolley, spoke to OTB. He did the interview, obviously, on the pitch, where I think there was very much a press being made by Shane Dawson, which was, are you trying to kind of, inject a bit of steel into your team? Are you trying to get them to maybe be a little bit less nice? And he answered them straight out. I don't think he blinked a bit in that TV interview, by the way, as well. He's getting Roy Keane compared.
He hasn't time for blinking, I think, at the moment. Yeah.
No. So he said in the press conference afterwards, down in the halls of Páirc Uí Chaoimh, last week, my words got twisted and turned. I was speaking to you above in Galway. RT had something on. I wasn't even watching it. Something above in Dublin. There's a very Cork thing about this idea of up in Dublin. That's what they were saying. On Sunday night about one of our players, my comments were twisted and turned. What I'm on about is, and when I say soccer, red card, yellow card, technical areas, you can't go onto the field, can't get a message in. So where are we getting all this from? We're getting it from soccer. That's where we're getting it all from. They're trying to cleanse the game. And then I say cleanse the game, something like that. It's just something stupid. A little tap like that. We've got two fellas sent off outside. We're after seeing it now below on the screen. Two of them below are pulling jerseys. Two fellas that are training for the last 6 months. and that's the way they're treated, end quote. So, look, one thing that stuck out for me, Murph, before we talk about his direct quotes were, if anyone thought the Ben O'Connor teams weren't going to play on the edge a little bit, did anyone see the under-20 All-Ireland final from about 3 years ago? Mm. Where Cork went out and Offaly had this team and everyone was talking about their young forwards and what they were going to do, and Cork bullied them off the pitch. Mm. And in the spirit of hard hurling, and that's how they beat them. So we knew this was going to happen. By all reports, his new Shandrum teams took no shit either. They went out there and took care of the teams that they were playing against. Maybe that's exactly what Cork need. But I thought that Darragh Fitzgibbon was interesting too. He was speaking after the game. He said, do you know what? This is now different to what Kingston would have said to us previously, what Myler wouldn't have said to us previously, what Pat Ryan wouldn't have said to us previously. It's not like he's come in and went, you need to change your approach. But the reality is that obviously Ben O'Connor wants to get a little bit, maybe a bit of roughness, a bit of, this might be the thing that gets him over the line.
No, you're dead right. You took the words out of my mouth. Like, the few things with Ben O'Connor, like he said, one of the things he had asked with RTE was that they won the match last night or Saturday night, and he was like, yeah, we won the match and look, we have a break now, we're going down to Kilkenny there and we're going down to try and win that match there, or we're going down to win it or whatever it is. But like, usually managers in that situation say, look, we'll see how we get on and blah blah blah, like a bit more of a watery answer, to put it that way. But he's being very direct, and I think by being publicly very direct like that, I think one of the things it does, I think it provides a buffer between the players and that Cork hype that potentially may come down the tracks. Ben O'Connor is just firing from the hip and he's not taking any bullshit. And he's just saying, we're going out there to win matches. Every team is playing on the edge. It's the same for everybody, blah, blah. And like, I'm not looking at another sport, but like, so Jose Mourinho used to be very good at this. And there's managers who, they look at the manager, they don't look at the players. And this might be a deliberate tactic out of Ben O'Connor. Maybe he's just been, this is exactly how he is and he's just speaking. But I think it rubs off on the players. I think, like, maybe that no-nonsense, very direct, I think that may breed into the culture. And it's interesting you're saying there was a Kingston said that that's the way the other managers. I wouldn't have got that impression from seeing interviews of Kingston or Pat Ryan or whoever. It really is quite obvious with Ben O'Connor that this is his MO, that he just talks straight. He's no-nonsense and very steely. Like, you know, you just get it from his persona that he's just very steely. I do think it will. I think it'll go into the team. I think it'll breed into the team. And I think it'll only serve them positively, because we're talking about a team in the All-Ireland last year, last 35 minutes, and people are saying, you know, oh, will they carry it into this year? Will they, won't they? From looking at Ben O'Connor's persona, like, it looks like that he'll address that nose to nose with the players, get it out of the way and drive on. And probably the best tonic for those players is having a voice like that in the dressing room. So look, I think as, like, we're running the league now, like, for Jesus, we're running the first week of February and we've gotten some serious straight talking done. Like, come to the Munster Championship, this man is going to be killing lads, killing journalists inside. It'll be great. But yeah, he's interesting. If he's nothing else, it's very interesting to see it.
Well, he's going to keep journalists on their toes as well, because you can't get away with one or two things that happen in a couple of interviews where people are like, oh, this gives you magnificent momentum. And he's kind of gone, we've only won 3 league games. You know, cool the jets a little bit. So he's going to say what he thinks.
It is funny. Like, if you really wanted to pick it apart, there is funny, like, humorous parts there as well, where exactly, RT asked him that last night. He said, this is only a league game, you know, there's nothing to it. But then also lost his mind that the lads were sent off and so on, that, you know, they're training for 6 months, like, and they're after getting sent off. So you're like, if you really wanted to drill into it, a journalist could have an argument with him there to say, he just said 10 minutes ago that it's only a league game, but here we are. So, but I think that'll only make things more interesting.
How do I get a journalist pass, Les?
We can get you one. Do you want to go down and sit down and chat with Ben O'Connor, do you?
Wait, I think you're talking shit. I have a question here.
Just go in and start throwing shots at him. You didn't. I'm trying to think. I'd say a good game you could play is, how many times has Ben O'Connor blinked during an interview? Because in my mind, the burning vision I have of him in the interviews last night, he wasn't blinking. He was just staring at the person who asked the question, and then question answered, looked at the next that. So I've never heard him speak that much before, and it's very interesting.
In a world of banal post-match interviews as well, you mentioned last week, Murph, I really enjoyed Kieran McGeaney the week before, where, you know, he's happy enough to have a back and forth and to defend his position, and particularly if there was a claim, I think in that one, that he was telling his players to hand pass the ball over the bar. He argued he's not, and he gives them agency to do whatever they want. And in the case of O'Connor, he's gone, look, I made comments the week before, these have made headlines, I would like to clarify what I think, and this is what I think about the game, and this is why I think the hurling is going in direction maybe I'm not overly happy about, but I want to be clear, this is why I've said it. So fair play. I think it's a bit of interesting copy coming out of the weekend. It's a lot better than Manager X was delighted with his team because they won game by 7 points and they move on to the next round and that's all that matters.
It's a little
bit more interesting. We'll move along because we're already 40 minutes in now. This is after just one game.
On episode 2 of Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors podcast, the stories behind the transfers that almost happened but just about didn't. Focuses on one of the greatest of all time, Pelé.
Pelé. Baba, back to Pelé. Now what's he going to do? He's got the third! Oh, beautiful goal!
And how the Santos superstar nearly swapped Brazil for Hanover. And how a Nazi